Chapter 10 Masterstroke. The heat struck like a blowlamp, so sharp and sudden that she gasped. She'd had sunstroke once, up on the downs, when she'd gone without a bonnet. And this was like that. The world around her was in worrying shades of dull green, yellow and purple, without shadows. The air was so full of heat that she felt she could squeeze smoke out of it. She was in reeds, they looked like, much taller than her, with sunflowers growing in them, except the sunflowers were white, because they weren't, in fact, sunflowers at all. They were daisies. She knew it. She'd stared at them dozens of times in that strange picture in the fairy tales. They were daisies, and these weren't giant reeds around her. They were blades of grass, and she was very, very small. She was in the weird picture. The picture was the dream, or the dream was the picture. Which way round didn't matter, because she was right in the middle of it. If you fell off a cliff, it wouldn't matter if the ground was rushing up or you were rushing down. You were in trouble either way. Somewhere in the distance there was a loud crack and a ragged cheer. Someone clapped and said in a sleepy sort of voice, "Well done, good man, very well done." With some effort, Tiffany pushed her way between the blades of grass. On a flat rock, a man was cracking nuts half as big as he was, with a two-handed hammer. He was being watched by a crowd of people. Tiffany used the word people because she couldn't think of anything else that was suitable, but it was stretching the word a bit to make it fit all the people. They were different sizes, for one thing. Some of the men were taller than her, even if you allowed for the fact that everyone was shorter than the grass, but others were tiny. Some of them had faces that you wouldn't look at twice. Others had faces that no one would want to look at even once. "This is a dream, after all," Tiffany told herself. "It doesn't have to make sense or be nice. It's a dream, not a daydream. People who say things like, 'May all your dreams come true,' should try living in one for 5 minutes." She stepped out into the bright, stiflingly hot clearing, just as the man raised his hammer again, and said, "Excuse me?" "Yes," he said. "Is there a queen round here?" said Tiffany. The man wiped his forehead and nodded towards the other side of the clearing. "Her Majesty's gone to her bar," he said. "That being a nook or resting place?" said Tiffany. The man nodded and said, "Correct again, Miss Tiffany." "Don't ask how he knows your name," Tiffany told herself. "Thank you," she said. And because she had been brought up to be polite, she added, "Best of luck with the nutcracking."
"This one's the toughest yet," said the man.
Tiffany walked off, trying to look as if this collection of strange nearly people was just another crowd. Probably the scariest ones were the big women, two of them. Big women were valued on the chalk. Farmers liked big wives. Farm work was hard, and there was no call for a wife who couldn't carry a couple of piglets or a bale of hay. But these two could have carried a horse each. They stared haughtily at her as she walked past. They had tiny, stupid little wings on their backs.
"Nice day for watching nuts being cracked," said Tiffany cheerfully as she went past.
Their huge, pale faces wrinkled, as if they were trying to work out what she was. Sitting down near them, watching the nutcracker with an expression of concern, was a little man with a large head, a fringe of white beard and pointy ears. He was wearing very old-fashioned clothes, and his eyes followed Tiffany as she went past. "Good morning," she said.
"Sneebs," he said,
and in her head appeared the words, "Get away from here."
"Excuse me," she said.
"Sneebs,"
said the man, wringing his hands, and the words appeared floating in her brain. "It's terribly dangerous." He waved a pale hand as if to brush her away. Shaking her head, Tiffany walked on. There were lords and ladies, people in fine clothes, and even a few shepherds, but some of them had a pieced-together look. They looked, in fact, like a picture book back in her bedroom. It was made of thick card, worn raggedy-edged by generations of aching children. Each page showed a character, and each was cut into four strips that could be turned over independently. The point of the whole thing was that a bored child could turn over parts of the pages and change the way the characters were dressed. You could end up with a soldier's head on a baker's chest, wearing a maid's dress and a farmer's big boots. Tiffany had never been bored enough. She considered that even things that spend their whole lives hanging from the underside of branches would never be bored enough to spend more than 5 seconds with that book. The people around her looked either as though they'd been taken from that book, or had dressed for a fancy dress party in the dark. One or two of them nodded to her as she passed, but didn't seem surprised to see her. She ducked under a round leaf much bigger than she was and took out the toad again.
"Warm and still cold," said the toad, hunching down on her hand.
"Cold? The air is baking."
"There's just snow," said the toad. "Put me back. I'm freezing."
"Just a minute," thought Tiffany. "Do toads dream?" she said.
"No."
"Oh, so it's not really hot?"
"No, you just think it is."
"Psst," said a voice. Tiffany put the toad away and wondered if she dared turn her head.
"It's me," said the voice.
Tiffany turned towards a clump of daisies twice the height of a man.
"That's not a lot of help." "Are you bad?" said the daisies. "I'm looking for my brother," said Tiffany sharply. "The horrible child who screams for sweeties all the time."
The daisy stems parted, and the boy Roland darted out and joined her under the leaf.
"Yes," she said, edging away, and feeling that only a sister has a right to call even a brother like Wentworth horrible. "And threatens to go to the toilet if he's left alone," said Roland.
"Yes, where is he?"
"That's your brother, the one who's permanently sticky."
"I told you."
"And you really want him back?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"He's my brother," Tiffany thought. "What's why got to do with it?"
"Because he's my brother. Now tell me where he is."
"Are you sure you can get out of here?" said Roland.
"Of course," Tiffany lied.
"And you can take me with you?"
"Yes." Well, she hoped so.
"All right. I'll let you do that," said Roland, relaxing.
"Oh, you'll let me, will you?" said Tiffany.
"Look, I didn't know what you were, all right," said Roland. "There's always weird things in the forest. Lost people, bits of dreams that are still lying around. You have to be careful. But if you really know the way, then I ought to get back before my father worries too much."
Tiffany felt the second thoughts starting. They said, "Don't change your expression. Just check."
"How long have you been here?" she asked carefully.
"Exactly."
"Well, the lights doesn't really change much," said the boy. "It feels like I've been here, hours, maybe a day."
Tiffany tried hard not to let her face give anything away, but it didn't work. Roland's eyes narrowed.
"I have, haven't I?" he said.
Why do you ask?" said Tiffany desperately.
"Because, in a way, it feels like longer. I've only been hungry two or three times, and I've been to the, twice, so it can't be very long. But I've done all kinds of things. It's been a busy day."
His voice trailed off.
You're right," said Tiffany. "Time goes slowly here. It's been a bit longer." 100 years? Don't tell me it's 100 years. Something magical has happened, and it's 100 years, yes?"
"What? No, nearly a year." The boy's reaction was surprising. This time he looked really frightened.
"Oh, no, that's worse than 100 years.
"How?" said Tiffany, bewildered.
"If it was 100 years, I wouldn't get a thrashing when I got home."
Thought Tiffany. "I don't think that's going to happen," she said aloud. "Your father has been very miserable. Besides, it's not your fault you were stolen by the Queen." She hesitated, because this time it was his expression that gave it all away.
"Was it?"
"Well, there was this fine lady on a horse with bells all over its harness, and she galloped past me when I was out hunting, and she was laughing, so, of course, I spurred my horse and chased after her, and—"
He fell silent.
"That probably wasn't a good decision," said Tiffany. "It's not bad here," said Roland. "It just keeps changing. There's doorways everywhere. I mean entrances into other places." His voice tailed off.
"You'd better start at the beginning," said Tiffany.
"It was great at first," said Roland. "I thought it was, an adventure. She fed me sweetmeats."
"What are they exactly?" said Tiffany. Her dictionary hadn't included that one.
"Are they like sweetbreads?" "I don't know. What are sweetbreads?"
"The pancreas or thymus gland of a cow," said Tiffany. "Not a very good name, I think." Roland's face went red with the effort of thought.
"These were more like nougat."
Right, go on, said Tiffany. And then she told me to sing and dance and skip and play, said Roland. She said that's what children were supposed to do.
Did you?
Would you? I'd feel like an idiot. I'm 12, you know.
Roland hesitated.
In fact, if what you say is true, I'm 13 now, right?
Why did she want you to skip and play, said Tiffany, instead of saying, no, you're still 12 and act like you're 8?
She just said that's what children do, said Roland.
Tiffany wondered about this. As far as she could see, children mostly argued, shouted, ran around very fast, laughed loudly, picked their noses, got dirty and sulked. Any seen dancing and skipping and singing had probably been stung by a wasp.
Strange, she said. And then, when I wouldn't, she gave me more sweets.
More nougat.
Sugar plums, said Roland. They're like plums, you know, with sugar on. She's always trying to feed me sugar. She thinks I like it.
A small bell rang in Tiffany's memory. You don't think she's trying to feed you up before she bakes you in an oven and eats you, do you?
Of course not. Only wicked witches do that.
Tiffany's eyes narrowed.
Oh, yes, she said carefully. I forgot. So you've been living on sweeties? No, I know how to hunt. Real animals get in here, I don't know how. Sneebs thinks they find the doorways in by accident. And then they starve to death, because it's always winter here. Sometimes the Queen sends out robbing parties, if a door opens into an interesting world, too. This whole place is like a pirate ship.
Yes, or a sheep tick, said Tiffany, thinking aloud.
What are they?
They're insects that bite sheep and suck blood and don't drop off until they're full, said Tiffany.
Yuck! I suppose that's the kind of thing peasants have to know about, said Roland. I'm glad I don't. I've seen through the doorways to one or two worlds. They wouldn't let me out there. We got potatoes from one and fish from another. I think they've frightened people into giving them stuff. Oh, and there was the world where the drones come from. They laughed about that and said if I wanted to go in there, I was welcome. I didn't. It's all red like a sunset. A great huge sun on the horizon, and a red sea that hardly moves, and red rocks and long shadows. And those horrible creatures sitting on the rocks, living off crabs and spidery things and little scribbity creatures. It was awful. There was this sort of ring of little claws and shells and bones around every one of them.
Who are they? Said Tiffany, who had noted the word peasants.
What do you mean?
You keep talking about they, said Tiffany. Who do you mean, the people out there?
Those? Most of them aren't even real, said Roland. I mean the elves, the fairies. That's who she's queen of, didn't you know?
I thought they were small.
I think they can be any size they like, said Roland. They're not exactly real. They're like dreams of themselves. They can be as thin as air or as solid as a rock, Sneebs says.
Sneebs? Said Tiffany.
Oh, the little man that just says Sneebs but real words turn up in your head. Yes, that's him. He's been here for years. That's how I knew about the time being wrong. Sneebs got back into his own world once and it was all different. He was so miserable he found another doorway and came straight back.
He came back? Said Tiffany, astonished.
He said it was better to belong where you don't belong than not to belong where you used to belong, remembering when you used to belong there, said Roland. At least I think that's what he said. He said it's not too bad here if you keep out of the Queen's way. He says you can learn a lot.
Tiffany looked back at the hunched figure of Sneebs, who was still watching the nuts cracking. He didn't look as though he was learning anything. He just looked like someone who'd been frightened for so long it had become part of his life, like freckles.
But you mustn't make the Queen angry, said Roland. I've seen what happens to people who make her angry. She sets the bumblebee women on them.
Are you talking about those huge women with tiny wings?
Yes, they're vicious. And if the Queen gets really angry with someone, she just stares at them and they change.
What into?
Other things. I don't want to have to draw your picture, Roland shuddered. And if I did, I'd need a lot of red and purple crayons. Then they get dragged off and left for the drones.
He shook his head.
Listen, dreams are real here, really real. When you're inside them, you're not exactly here. The nightmares are real too. You can die.
This doesn't feel real, Tiffany told herself. This feels like a dream. I could almost wake up from it. I must always remember what's real.
She looked down at her faded blue dress, with the bad stitching around the hem, caused by it being let out and taken in as its various owners had grown. That was real. And she was real. Cheese was real. Somewhere not far away was a world of green turf under a blue sky, and that was real. The Knack Mac Feagal were real, and once again she wished they were here. There was something about the way they shouted, "Crivens!" and attacked everything in sight that was so very comforting. Roland was probably real. Almost everything else was really a dream, in a robber world that lived off the real worlds and where time nearly stood still and horrible things could happen at any moment. "I don't want to know anything more about it," she decided. "I just want to get my brother and go home while I'm still angry. Because when I stop being angry, that'll be the time to get frightened again, and I'll be really frightened this time, too frightened to think, as frightened as Sneebs. And I must think." "The first dream I fell into was like when a mine," she said. "I've had dreams where I wake up and I'm still asleep, but the ballroom, I've never..." "Oh, that was one of mine," said Roland. "From when I was young, I woke up one night and went down into the big hall, and there were all these people with masks on, dancing. It was just so bright." He looked wistful for a moment. "That was when my mother was still alive." "This one's a picture from a book I've got," said Tiffany. "She must have got that from me." "No, she often uses it," said Roland. "She likes it. She picks up dreams from everywhere. She collects them." Tiffany stood up and picked up the frying pan again. "I'm going to see the Queen," she said. "Don't," said Roland. "You're the only other real person here except Sneebs, and he's not very good company." "I'm going to get my brother and go home," said Tiffany flatly. "I'm not going to come with you then," said Roland. "I don't want to see what she turns you into." Tiffany stepped out into the heavy, shadowless light and followed the path up the slope. Giant grasses arched overhead. Here and there, more strangely dressed, strangely shaped people turned to watch her, but then acted as though she was just a passing wanderer of no interest whatsoever. She glanced behind her. In the distance, the nutcracker had found a bigger hammer and was getting ready to strike.
"Wanna, wanna, wanna, sweetie!"
Tiffany's head shot round like a weathercock in a tornado. She ran along the path, head down, ready to swing the pan at anything that stood in her way, and burst through a clump of trees into a space lined with daisies. It could well have been a bower. She didn't bother to check. Wentworth was sitting on a large, flat stone surrounded by sweets. Many of them were bigger than he was. Smaller ones were in piles, large ones lay like logs. And they were in every colour sweets can be, such as not really raspberry red, fake lemon yellow, curiously chemical orange, some kind of acidy green, and who knows what blue. Tears were falling off his chin in blobs. Since they were landing amongst the sweets, serious stickiness was already taking place. Wentworth howled. His mouth was a big red tunnel, with a wobbly thing that no one knows the name of, bouncing up and down at the back of his throat. He only stopped crying when it was time either to breathe in or die, and even then it was only for one huge, sucking moment before the howl came back again. Tiffany knew what the problem was immediately. She'd seen it before at birthday parties. Her brother was suffering from tragic sweet deprivation. Yes, he was surrounded by sweets. But the moment he took any sweet at all, said his sugar-addled brain, that meant he was not taking all the rest. And there were so many sweets, he'd never be able to eat them all. It was too much to cope with. The only solution was to burst into tears. The only solution at home was to put a bucket over his head until he calmed down and take almost all the sweets away. He could deal with a few handfuls at a time. Tiffany dropped the pan and swept him up in her arms. "It's Tiffy," she whispered, "and we're going home." "And this is where I meet the Queen," she thought. But there was no scream of rage, no explosion of magic, nothing. There was just the buzz of bees in the distance, and the sound of wind and grass, and the gulping of Wentworth, who was too shocked to cry. She could see now that the far side of the bower contained a couch of leaves, surrounded by hanging flowers, but there was no one there.
"That is because I'm behind you," said the voice of the Queen in her ear.
Tiffany turned around quickly. There was no one there.
"Still behind you," said the Queen. "This is my world, child. You'll never be as fast as me, or as clever as me. Why are you trying to take my boy away?
He isn't yours, he's ours, said Tiffany.
You never loved him. You have a heart like a little snowball, I can see it.
Tiffany's forehead wrinkled. Love, she said.
What's that got to do with it? He's my brother. My brother. Yes, that's a very witchy thing, isn't it? Said the voice of the Queen. Selfishness. Mine, mine, mine. All a witch cares about is what's hers.
You stole him.
Stole? You mean you thought you owned him?
Tiffany's second thought said, she's finding your weaknesses. Don't listen to her.
Ah! You have second thoughts, said the Queen. I expect you think that makes you very witchy, do you?
Why won't you let me see you, said Tiffany. Are you frightened?
Frightened, said the voice of the Queen, of something like you.
And the Queen was there in front of her. She was much taller than Tiffany, but just as slim. Her hair was long and black, her face pale, her lips cherry red, her dress black and white and red. And it was all very slightly wrong. Tiffany's second thoughts said, it's because she's perfect. Completely perfect, like a doll. No one real is as perfect as that. That's not you, said Tiffany with absolute certainty. That's just your dream of you. That's not you at all. The Queen's smile disappeared for a moment and came back all edgy and brittle.
Such rudeness! And you hardly know me, she said, sitting down on the leafy seat.
She patted behind her.
Do sit down, she said. Standing there like that is so confrontational. I will put your bad manners down to simple disorientation.
She gave Tiffany a beautiful smile. Look at the way her eyes move, said Tiffany's second thoughts. I don't think she's using them to see you with. They're just beautiful ornaments.
You have invaded my home, killed some of my creatures, and generally acted in a mean and despicable way, said the Queen. This offends me. However, I understand that you have been badly led by disruptive elements. You stole my brother, said Tiffany, holding Wentworth tightly. You steal all sorts of things.
But her voice sounded weak and tinny in her ears.
He was wandering around lost, said the Queen calmly. I brought him home and comforted him.
And what there was about the Queen's voice was this. It said, in a friendly, understanding way, that she was right and you were wrong. And this wasn't your fault exactly. It was probably the fault of your parents or your food or something so terrible you've completely forgotten about it. It wasn't your fault, the Queen understood, because you were a nice person. It was just such a terrible thing that all these bad influences had made you make the wrong choices. If only you'd admit that, Tiffany, then the world would be a much happier place.
This cold place, guarded by monsters, in a world where nothing grows older or up, said her second thoughts. A world with the Queen in charge of everything. Don't listen.
She managed to take a step backwards.
Am I a monster? Said the Queen. All I wanted was a little bit of company.
And Tiffany's second thoughts, quite swamped by the Queen's wonderful voice, said, Miss Female Robinson. She'd come to work as a maid at one of the farms many years ago. They said that she'd been brought up in a home for the destitute in Yelp. They said she'd been born there after her mother had arrived during a terrible storm and the master had written in his big black diary to Miss Robinson, female infant. And her young mother hadn't been very bright and was dying in any case and had thought that was the baby's name. After all, it had been written down in an official book. Miss Robinson was quite old now, never said much, never ate much, but you never saw her not doing something. No one could scrub a floor like Miss Female Infant Robinson. She had a thin, wispy face with a pointed red nose and thin, pale hands with red knuckles, which were always busy. Miss Robinson worked hard. Tiffany hadn't understood a lot of what was going on when the crime happened. The women talked about it in twos and threes at garden gates, their arms folded,
and they'd stop and look indignant if a man walked past. She picked up bits of conversation, though sometimes they seemed to be in a kind of code, like, never really had anyone of her own, poor old soul. Wasn't her fault if she was skinnier than a rake? And they say that when they found her, she was cuddling it and said it was hers. And the house was full of baby clothes she'd knitted. That last one had puzzled Tiffany at the time, because it was said in the same tone of voice that someone would use to say, and the house was full of human skulls. But they all agreed on one thing. We can't have this. A crime's a crime. The Baron's got to be told. Miss Robinson had stolen a baby, Punctuality Riddle, who had been much loved by his young parents, even though they'd named him Punctuality, reasoning that if children could be named after virtues like patience, faith, and prudence, what was wrong with a little good timekeeping? He'd been left in his crib in the yard, and had vanished, and there had been all the usual searchings and weepings, and then someone had mentioned that Miss Robinson had been taking home extra milk. It was kidnapping. There weren't many fences on the chalk and very few doors with locks. Theft of all kinds was taken very seriously. If you couldn't turn your back on what was yours for 5 minutes, where would it all end? The law's the law. A crime's a crime. Tiffany had overheard bits of arguments all over the village, but the same phrases cropped up over and over again. Poor thing never meant no harm. She was a hard worker, never complained. She's not right in the head. The law's the law. A crime's a crime. And so the Baron was told, and he held a court in the great hall, and everyone who wasn't wanted up on the hills turned up, including Mr. and Mrs. Riddle, she looking worried, he looking determined, and Miss Robinson, who just stared at the ground with her red knuckly hands on her knees. It was hardly a trial. Miss Robinson was confused about what she was guilty of, and it seemed to Tiffany that so was everyone else. They weren't certain why they were there, and they'd come to find out. The Baron had been uneasy, too. The law was clear. Theft was a dreadful crime, and stealing a human being was much worse. There was a prison in Yelp, right beside the home for the destitute. Some said that there was even a connecting door. That was where thieves went. And the Baron wasn't a big thinker. His family had held the chalk by not changing their mind about anything for hundreds of years. He sat and listened and drummed his fingers on the table and looked at people's faces and acted like a man sitting on a very hot chair. Tiffany was in the front row. She was there when the man started to give his verdict, umming and aahing, trying not to say the words he knew he'd have to say, when the door at the back of the hall opened and the sheepdogs Thunder and Lightning trotted in. They came down the aisle between the rows of benches and sat down in front of the Baron, looking bright-eyed and alert. Only Tiffany craned to see back up the aisle. The doors were still slightly ajar. They were far too heavy, even for a strong dog to push them open, and she could just make out someone looking through the crack. The Baron stopped and stared. He, too, looked at the other end of the hall. And then, after a few moments, he pushed the law book aside and said, "Perhaps we should do this a different way." And there was a different way, involving people paying a little more attention to Miss Robinson. It wasn't perfect, and not everyone was happy, but it worked. Tiffany smelled the scent of Jolly Sailor outside the hall when the meeting was over, and thought about the Baron's dog. "Remember this day," Granny Aching had said, "and you'll have cause to." Barons needed reminding. "Who will speak up for you?" Tiffany said aloud.
"Speak up for me," answered the Queen, her fine eyebrows arching.
And Tiffany's third thoughts said, "Watch her face when she is worried." "There isn't anyone, is there?" said Tiffany, backing away. "Is there anyone you've been kind to? Anyone who'll say you're not just a thief and a bully? Because that's what you are. You're like the Dromes. You've just got one trick." And there it was. Now she could see what her third thoughts had spotted. The Queen's face flickered for a moment. "And that's not your body," said Tiffany, plunging on. "That's just what you want people to see. It's not real. It's just like everything else here. It's hollow and empty." The Queen ran forward and slapped her much harder than a dream should be able to. Tiffany landed in the moss, and Wentworth rolled away, yelling, "Wanna go a tailor?" "Good," said Tiffany's third thoughts.
"Good?" said Tiffany aloud.
"Good," said the Queen.
"Yes," said the third thoughts, "because she doesn't know you can have third thoughts, and your hand is only a few inches in a frying pan, and things like her hate iron, don't they? She's angry. Now make her furious so that she doesn't think. Hurt her."
"You just live here in a land full of winter, and all you do is dream of summers," said Tiffany. "No wonder the king went away."
The queen stood still for a moment, like the beautiful statue she so much resembled. Again the walking dream flickered, and Tiffany thought she saw something. It was not much bigger than her, and almost human, and a little shabby, and, just for a moment, shocked.
Then the queen was back, tall and angry, and she drew a deep breath. Tiffany grabbed the pan and swung it as she rolled onto her feet. She hit the tall figure, only a glancing blow, but the queen wavered like air over a hot road and screamed. Tiffany didn't wait to see what else was going to happen. She grabbed her brother again and ran away, down through the grass, past the strange figures, looking around at the sound of the queen's anger. Now shadows moved in the shadowless grasses. Some of the people, the joke people, the ones that looked like a flaps on the pages picture book, changed shape and started to move after Tiffany and her screaming brother. There was a booming noise on the other side of the clearing. The two huge creatures that Roland had called the bumblebee women were rising off the ground, their tiny wings blurring with the effort. Somebody grabbed her and pulled her into the grasses. It was Roland.
"Can you get out now?" he demanded, his face red.
Tiffany began.
"Then we'd better just run," he said. "Give me your hand. Come on."
"Do you know a way out?" Tiffany panted as they dashed through the giant daisies.
"No," Roland panted back. "There isn't one. You saw the drones outside. This is a really strong dream." "Then where are we running?" "To keep out of her way. If you hide long enough, Sneeb says she forgets."
"I don't think she's going to forget me very quickly," Tiffany thought. Roland had stopped, but she pulled her hand away and ran onward, with Wentworth clinging to her in silent amazement.
"Where are you going?" shouted Roland behind her. "I really want to keep out of her way." "Come back! You're running right back."
"No, I'm not. I'm running in a straight line."
"This is a dream," Roland shouted, but it was louder now because he was catching her up. "You're running right around."
Tiffany burst into a clearing. The clearing. The bumblebee women landed on either side of her, and the queen stepped forward.
"You know," said the queen, "I really expected better of you, Tiffany. Now give me back the boy, and I shall decide what to do next."
"It's not a big dream," mumbled Roland behind her. "If you go too far, you end up coming back."
"I could make a dream for you that's even smaller than you are," said the queen pleasantly. "That can be quite painful."
The colours were brighter, and sounds were louder. Tiffany could smell something, too, and what was strange about that was that up until now there had been no smells. It was a sharp, bitter smell that you never forgot. It was the smell of snow, and underneath the insect buzzings in the grass she heard the faintest of voices.
"Crivens, I canny find the way oot,"